Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. Brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play, in the home of the 2020 PGA Championship. And joining us is Mark Purdy from the Bay Area News Group. He's coming off the bench for Steve Bono here today and this week as we talk about the 49ers' loss in Pittsburgh and look forward for the 49ers. 43-18 was the final score. And yes, it was as bad as the final score for the Niners. Mark, when you look at this game and coming off the win over the Vikings, were you surprised? I mean, a lot of factors were going against the Niners traveling to the East Coast. The Steelers had all that extra time off because they played a Thursday night while the 49ers played a Monday night. So was this not really shocking to you?
Well, first of all, I'm glad to thank you for giving me this opportunity. I've been holding the clipboard on the sidelines waiting for my opportunity to as Steve Bono's backup, and now here we go. The only surprise really to me is that the game got out of hand so early. I'm not surprised at all the 49ers lost. You mentioned it. They had a really tough duty flying back there on 5 days' notice. The other team at home on 9 days or 9 days rest. For the home team and only five for the visiting team. I was really surprised that they let the game get out of control that early. And also surprised that the same thing kept beating the 49ers, which was Ben Roethlisberger dropping back, throwing the ball way down that field, and those long pass games. Usually an NFL team, after it sees that a couple times, can do something to at least make the other team beat you a different way. In other words, make sure they don't get behind you and throw the ball in front of you. I believe they were going to lose anyway, but it surprised me a little bit the way it happened. And it also showed the weaknesses that we thought we might see with the 49er team, and in this case, the offensive line on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't give a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger that much time to throw it. They didn't touch him. He had no hits and no sacks, and he's throwing bombs down the field. I mean, the completions, I was looking at 59 yards, 56, 48, 41, 35, 28, just ridiculous. And a lot of the completions were on third down. I mean, it seems like you'd be pressuring him, that the offense would be under some pressure to make those plays, and he looks so comfortable.
Right. Either you dial up some blitzes. Eric Mangini, the defensive coordinator, is famous for that. I'm surprised that he wasn't able to come up with something. If nothing else, just put four defensive backs way back there and make them throw in front of you.
Yeah.
And then try to tackle them and create a fumble or something. Just make them beat you a different way. That part surprised me, that they weren't able to stop that from happening over and over and over again. And that probably doesn't bode well. Now, not every team has a Ben Roethlisberger. Not every team, has the components Pittsburgh does. I mean, I believe they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I never thought the 49ers would be this year. But it was just surprising to me that they couldn't, once the flood began, they couldn't at least hold it back a little bit. The game was over by halftime. And, that almost never happens in the NFL, no matter who's playing.
Yeah, it was 29-3 at the half. The 49ers, they moved the ball a little bit, but they weren't scoring touchdowns. And then the one aspect that really, getting back to the final point here of the Steelers' offense, was that Antonio Brown was running free. I mean, it's Roethlisberger having time, but Brown, he had 9 catches for 195 yards. And the Niners' Kenneth Acker, it was only his second career start, he was completely exposed. I mean, I don't know, going forward, is that a learning process? Is it just because he's one of the best receivers in the NFL? How do you look at how you go forward with a player like that who was just getting burned time after time?
Well, he's not going to play Antonio Brown every week. That's the positive.
Yeah, right.
He's not going to happen. And what it tells you is the next time they face a receiver somewhat like him, you got to come up with a different plan. Roll over a safety there to help him every time. They were trying to do some of that Sunday in the part of the game I watched. I was actually covering the Raiders game that day, but watched the 49ers game on TV. I was at the Monday night Vikings game. But they were trying to roll Eric Reed over to help him some. But Brown's just damn good. And when Roethlisberger has time to throw and Brown has time to get open, know, it's over for not just them but for any team. And again, there's only one of those in the league. And you know, looking around the league, it's to me the biggest surprise is not that Roethlisberger's able to do that, but that some other teams are having difficulty. Some teams that have good quarterbacks, like the Ravens, are 0-2. The
Saints.
The Saints are 0-2. Yeah. The Lions, who I thought might be pretty decent this year, are 0-2. The Seahawks are 0-2. And all those teams have pretty good quarterbacks. So let's give credit to Roethlisberger for, you know, doing what he did and chalk it up as a, you know, they'll use that video, the 49ers, to try to figure out. I mean, you know, when the let's see what happens, not this week against Arizona, although Carson Palmer's good, but the week after that they play Aaron Rodgers and the Packers at Levi's Stadium, and that's when we're going to see how they try to change up, because obviously Rodgers is the kind of quarterback Roethlisberger is in terms of being able to stand in there and throw darts if you give him enough time. And he has some pretty good receivers, not on the par with Antonio Brown since his main guy got hurt. But that game against Green Bay is kind of when we're really going to see if the 49ers have a way to correct what they did this past Sunday. This Sunday's game will be a little different. I mean, Carson Palmer's good. Larry Fitzgerald is really good. And maybe we'll see some there. But I think that'll be the real test. The big thing the 49ers have to do, to me, off these first two games, people said, well, one was one wild thing on one side and one wild thing on the other side. But there were some commonalities. And I think what we've learned is to win, the 49ers have to possess the ball and run the ball. Because that offensive line has real problems with pass protection, particularly the right side of the line. But they, if they can run the ball and gain yards, then that sets up everything else well. And that's the part of the game against the Steelers a lot of people aren't talking about, is that the Steelers were able to stop Carlos Hyde and stop the run. And that's also a troubling thing. But I figured all along, Joe, this was going to be a 500 season, and we may just have these swings like this back and forth.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of depth in the running game outside of Hyde. And, you know, Hyde went out in the third quarter of the game. But, I mean, I think he's going to be fine. But I don't know about other running backs on this team where they did before. I mean, when they had Kendall Hunter, they kind of had like that change-up running back for Frank Gore. And then last year behind Gore, it was Hyde. So they just don't seem to have the depth there. I mean, do you think there's a lot being
you don't believe in the wonder from down under?
I don't as a running back. He doesn't look like he's comfortable running the ball. What do you think?
He's still learning. Well, this was the risk they took when they signed Reggie Bush. You know, Reggie Bush does, when he can play, he does some pretty cool stuff that will really make other teams stand up and worry, or sit down and worry, or however they worry.
Right.
But he is a history of these injuries, and I think I remember one thing that I wrote down in my notebook early. It was like I wasn't out of training camp that much because I was doing some other stuff too. But the 3 or 4 days I stopped in there, one of those first days of training camp, Jim Tomsula, the head coach, pretty much said, you know, I just want to tell you guys, meaning to the media, you know, you're not going to see Reggie Bush out there practicing much for us. I think he said, like, pretty much all year. You know, and I went, really? You know, this guy came to them, and they knew that, you know, he has injury issues, and he's injury prone. And sure enough, in that first game, he develops the calf injury, and we haven't seen him much since. And you get the impression he's one of those guys that, I mean, this happens in the NFL. Justin Smith, I don't think practiced, you know, when he was, his last couple seasons with the 49ers, I don't know that he practiced at all during the week any day, but he was there Sundays, and of course he'd go through the film work and the walkthroughs. And I get the impression that's what Reggie Bush, what they kind of planned, that he would not practice much, but that he would be able on Sunday to make, you know, 3 or 4, you know, plays that would really make a difference in a game. But he's already hurt, and that really affects your running back depth if you have a guy like that, because now you're looking at you know, somebody like a guy from Australia who has never played American football this year, and the other guys, Michael Davis. Michael Davis, you know, who I guess okay, but the 49ers created this depth at running back problem situation pretty, you know, for them, that this was the choice they made. They kept Bush knowing that he might get hurt, and they kept Hain knowing that he hasn't played much American football.
Yeah, so then you don't have depth if Bush is out. I mean, it would be a huge factor if he is in there, and maybe he could return some kicks too, because even in that area, you thought maybe Hain would be great, and that hasn't happened, and DeAndre White doesn't look
really
great.
When I really miss him is on the swing passes or the bubble screens or where you get Bush in space and he can make moves.
Right.
That's, I think, more than slamming into the line, that's where Bush has been so effective. And so now with him out, it probably takes some of those out of the offensive packages, because I don't know a guy coming from Australia, never play American football, I don't know he knows it, but a bubble screen or those, they look fairly simple, but there's a lot of timing involved that, of course, you learn growing up playing football, how that all fits together, and Hain, for all the talent he does have at certain things, is not used to that. And Carlos Hyde, when he's in there, that probably isn't his strength either, although maybe he can learn to do that. But, the 49ers never use Gore in that way much either. We'll see what Jeep Chris draws up this week, but yes, you've pegged an issue there. But still, even if they had depth at running back, Joe, that offensive line, oh man, the right side in particular. Joe Staley is a Pro Bowl tackle. We all know that, and Alex Boone is pretty good at left guard, but from Marcus Martin the center onto those two guys on the right side who, were basically picked up during training camp, never a good thing. That's a real issue for them. Again, I remember one of the times I was at training camp, I won't say who, a guy who's coached in the NFL, is not now, but a guy who I've trusted over the years to kind of give me insights. I said, "What do you think?" And he goes, "Boy, that line, seeing other lines around the league and then looking at that line, that's going to be an issue for them." And I think he's turned out to be right.
In just a moment, we'll have more with Mark Purdy from the Bay Area News Group filling in for Steve Bono. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Well, there were times during the game it seemed like some Steelers defensive linemen were completely unblocked. And that was the thing I was going to say. I didn't think Colin Kaepernick had a bad game. It's just he didn't have much time to throw. He got sacked five times, but 33 of 46, a couple of touchdowns. He threw a beautiful strike to Torrey Smith. I know Jim Tomsula, I heard, didn't even want to talk about it. He was so upset about the game. He wasn't even looking at positives, but I thought that was a major positive to see him connect with Smith just for the future. Vernon Davis seemed to be better, more involved. So I just think there were some positives there that you could have going forward. What'd you think?
Well, it's good to know you can do that. Now, what we don't know is at that point, with the Steeler defense, it kind of just maybe shifted, down a gear or so and wasn't quite as intense. But it's still good that to show you can do it. It puts something on video for other teams to be concerned about, and it shows you can do it in an NFL game, not just in a – it really didn't happen much in the preseason yet either, really, did it? So it shows you can do it. It shows the possibilities. But, that – again, I don't know how hard Pittsburgh was rushing the passer on some of those. Every NFL game is really like a different chapter in a book, and – sometimes the characters change motivations and change personalities. I think among the things that I'm interested in watching this year is Kaepernick and how he adjusts every week to what he faces, because I think he's going to have to use his legs more this season if they're going to win more games, and that's probably what the 49ers maybe don't want him to do that much. And it may not even be what he wants to do that much, because I know he has a real burning desire to prove he can be a pocket quarterback in addition to using the physical skills he has. But, It must be really frustrating for Jeep Christ, the offensive coordinator, to sit in the room. Every guy's used to working with what he's had, but he cannot design many plays for that take 3 seconds or longer to develop, right?
Yeah.
Those bombs to Torrey Smith, they're probably going to have to be plays where Kaepernick rolls out right, or just has to. I don't know that he'll be able to stay in the pocket long enough to throw kind of that traditional long.
What pocket? Yeah, there was no pocket.
Yeah.
But you know what? The running skills, and I know, like you said, the 49ers might be concerned to have their quarterback running around, but he was their leading rusher, and it is exciting when he takes off. I mean, he knows how to run the ball, so I don't mind him doing it, whatever it is, 5 or 6 times a game, as long as he's not running for his life. Those design runs
are pretty good. He's gotten smart, too, Joe. I mean, he's getting better now at going down and not proving his manhood by, like, running into people or
right.
Or straight arming somebody the way Derek Carr of the Raiders tried to do that week 1 and ended up messing up his thumb doing it. I mean, you got to be smart in addition, and Kaepernick's smart. I think he's shown progress in learning how to go down and how to run out of bounds and taking care of his legs a little more. But he's going to have to use them.
You mentioned Arizona. That's the next game, and they scored 48 points in their win, and they're 2-0, and Carson Palmer looks like a world beater. Not the best team to have on the schedule right after you dealt with Ben Roethlisberger and playing in Arizona, but this is a big game early in the season because the 49ers don't want to see Arizona go into 3-0. So how do you see them attacking the Cardinals, a team that they used to pretty much beat up on regularly, but not anymore?
Well, defensively, I think you're going to see Eric Mangini, the defensive coordinator, dial up some pretty exotic or creative blitzes. Palmer has good arm, but he and while Ben Roethlisberger is not greatly mobile, he's damn hard to bring down, and he has a real good way of kind of sidestepping and staying upright. Palmer, watching him play for the Raiders those seasons, he is not that kind of guy. You can get to him. Palmer, as skilled as he is with his arm and his brain, his legs do not do that little sidestep very well, and he certainly can't escape the pocket. So I think you'll see some blitzes dialed up to try to get to him before he can find Larry Fitzgerald open. So I think on the defensive side of the ball, that's what the 49ers will try to do. They're not gonna let him stand back there the way Roethlisberger did, and the Cardinals do not have the people around him that the Steelers did in order for him to do that, and as I mentioned, he doesn't have the skill set. So defense, I think you'll see those exotic or at least creative type blitzes, a little bit of what you saw against the Vikings. Offensively, if Carlos Hyde is okay, and he seems to be, and really there was an underrated move I think Tom Sula made Sunday along with Tom Rathman, the running backs coach, that Hyde apparently after his he took a frightening blow on the knee, which nobody's talking about, but man, that looked awful. But he, I guess it's just a bruise. But then he got hit in the head and came out, had the concussion protocol. Apparently, was cleared to go back in. But Tom Sula made, in my mind, a very wise choice not to put him back on the field. If that means he's more good to go Sunday, that's great. You're going to have to see the 49ers establish that run by having those linemen push out, not drop back to pass block, because they do one of those a lot better than the other, as we saw against Minnesota. And I think if Hyde's healthy, I think they can run the ball on Arizona and control the clock. That's what they're going to have to do. I think the 49ers probably want a game more in the teens or 20s than in the 30s and 40s.
Right.
And I think that's going to be their mission this week, to keep the score in the teens or 20s, and again keep the ball in the hands of Hyde. Try to get him. Maybe he's not going to get 160 yards, but at least move the chains and find. I think Anquan Boldin would play a big role in this as a possession receiver.
Yeah, we'll see if the 49ers can slow down a Cardinals team that has scored 79 points, most in the NFL, after 2 games. As we finish up, let's talk about the column that you wrote about Levi Stadium and the issue that they had. I mean, most people know by now that there was a Minnesota Vikings fan that was assaulted by some intoxicated 49ers fans. And, you know, the title of your blog that I was reading, it's not the alcohol at the 49ers games that's causing the trouble. It's the knuckleheads who show up and decide to be drunk knuckleheads. And apparently the Santa Clara City Council members are pondering how to control the excessive drinking. So how do you see this playing out? Because, you know, a lot of NFL stadiums have an issue in this regard.
I would say every NFL stadium has some form of this. I mean, I've seen games, I think, in every NFL stadium. And, you know, I have a, it's not a superstition, but just kind of a, I don't know, habit or something I enjoy. Usually I take a lap around the stadium when I come to the game. Before I go inside, I just kind of take a walk around the stadium just to see fans, just to soak up, you know, what the vibe is.
Yeah.
And you see this kind of stuff everywhere. You know, I tell the story in my blog, my column today, of, you know, last time I was in Foxborough, Massachusetts, and I pulled in, like, it was a night game, pulled in like 3 hours before the game in my rental car. And by the time I reached around in the back to get my satchel and my game credentials and all that, turned around, there's a drunk guy urinating on my front tire.
Oh, my God.
But his buddy's like, you know, several spots away having a tailgater, just laughing really loud at that, you know. You're going to have knuckleheads at every game. It's an NFL issue. It's not a Santa Clara issue. It's not a Levi Stadium issue. It's, in my mind, the NFL, for some reason, anybody goes to an NFL game, it's just the demographic that the NFL has seemed to want to attract is the males aged 25 to 55 who go to games and seem to like to get to drink a lot.
Right.
Now, a lot of those people do drink and behave themselves quite fine and have fun and all that, but there's this percentage of people who just go over the line. And I don't want to not answer your question. I think on a practical matter, the Santa Clara City Council is going to talk about it. The police chief of Santa Clara, who I've talked to, is going to recommend, you know, look, we're talking about 22 to 30 arrests a game.
That seems like a lot game. To me, doesn't it? I mean, that's
well,
a lot
as
of
he pointed out, it's less than 0.5%.
Okay, but still, they're
of
getting
the game.
Arrested.
I know. But you know, I just went online and the Green Bay Packer, a Green Bay newspaper, because the Packers are the biggest thing in Green Bay. Obviously, they did like a detailed investigation of people who get arrested at Packer games. You know,
sure.
Most of them are from out of town. Most of them are like age 25 to 40, and they, you know, they have a few, they have like 15 to 20 arrests a game, right? Not as many as here.
Okay.
But a lot of the stuff is just stupid. You know, some drunk guy is trying to walk out with a, you know, there's a carpet cleaner. This sounds so stupid, but, you know, there's a carpet cleaner machine by the elevator, and some drunk guy decides he's going to walk out of the game with it and put it in his car. And the cop stops him. What are you doing? He said, well, it was in Packer colors. I really wanted it for my house. You know? So a lot of it is not fighting. You know, very little of it is fighting. It's just stupid drunk stuff. But the NFL has to really watch its relationship with alcohol, in my mind. Anyway, but answer your question. They'll have a meeting. They'll discuss it. The Santa Clara police chief, who is in charge of that whole thing, in talking to him yesterday, I didn't get the impression he's going to recommend any major changes. You know, the city council people who are concerned about this, and I understand it. I mean, you and I may, this is maybe strange to you and I, but a lot of people don't follow the NFL, right? I mean, a lot of people don't go to NFL games, and I think some of these city council people are kind of surprised. Like one of them said, I didn't realize there was this much drinking at games. You know, well, okay, that sounds silly to you and me, but okay, because if you don't,
they haven't been there
around that.
Yeah.
You're right. So I think the police chief's going to explain to them. It's a small percentage. And the big story to the police chief was those people that were, you saw on video beating up the guy, they caught those guys within 72 hours, arrested them. They've had their tickets and seat license pulled away. And in the police chief's mind, this is how you handle it. Some of the city council people have suggested cutting off alcohol sales at halftime. That is already the 49ers have the right to do that, of course, And I don't. It's unclear. In talking to Santa Clara's mayor Jamie Matthews, who I also spoke to, you know, he says it's unclear to him if the city, if the agreement the 49ers have with the city allows inside the stadium, the Santa Clara City Council to even change that policy. 49ers now have a right to do that, and in fact, at some 49er games and other events at Levi Stadium, they have cut off alcohol sales at halftime instead of at the end of the third quarter when they see things getting a little goofy. So that is already in place. I mean, this incident, and in no way do you want to excuse it, and I think it's why, frankly, I'm not... After I leave this business, Joe, I don't know that I'll attend many NFL games, you know, because it's not, you know, the atmosphere there is not, well, let's just not go there. But,
yeah,
but,
I know what
but,
you're saying.
This didn't take place inside the stadium. You know, we don't know that these people that beat up this guy, whether they had drinks after halftime or not, right? We don't know that.
Right.
I think the bigger problem to me is what goes on in the tailgate areas and kind of the unstructured and unregulated drinking that goes on there, so that a lot of people enter the gates in a very altered state. And what I've wondered about, I did not mention this in the column, but maybe in a future column, is, you know, the security entrance procedures now at NFL games are pretty fairly stringent, right? I mean, you have to go through a metal detector and sometimes get wanded and stuff. I've thought, you know, if they're going to do all that, and the people who are doing that seem to do a pretty professional job of doing that, why you couldn't designate, not at every gate, but, you know, there's always like four or five gates together, you know, tell us, have somebody with a breathalyzer there, right? And say, tell these people as they're wanding people or they're going, if you suspect somebody has had too much to drink, just send them, say, you've got to go over there, and you have this guy with a breathalyzer, and you give him a test, and you find out a guy's drinking level is over a certain amount. It might not be the threshold that to drive, because they're not going to drive, but at some level, and you find out, I'm sorry, sir, you've imbibed too much. We will refund your ticket and send you back to the car, right?
Yeah.
And just don't let them in the game, right? But this incident happened after the game. We don't know, in fact, whether even these guys had consumed alcohol inside the stadium at all. So maybe they were drunk going in, and who knows? So who's to say cutting off the beer or the alcohol at halftime would have made a difference in that? According to the Santa Clara police chief, who I've known and I trust him, you know, he says, you just got to get a message out to people that this behavior is not going to be tolerated, and we will arrest you, and we will incarcerate you, and you're stupid if you do this. There'll still be some problems, but if that message gets out, maybe you'll see an improvement in that, and maybe they get the rest down to Green Bay level instead of
right.
instead of 22-30.
Right.
But that's still not, you know, that's still it's a problem at every. There's something. This is another topic for a podcast, Joe. I mean, there's something about the NFL that draws these. I mean, to me, those guys that I saw in that video, just like the guys last year. Remember, there was an incident in the restroom where guys rumbled. Do you remember this? And a guy got knocked out,
yeah.
right? And they arrested those guys. They found out, you know, they were from Salinas, and they had some prior records and all that. To me, guys like that, I mean, it looks to me like they're looking to go cause trouble wherever they go, right?
Yeah, the Raiders 49ers incident.
Wherever they go, they're looking to cause trouble. The real question to me is, like, why do they think it's okay to go to NFL games and look for that trouble? I mean, you don't see that at AT&T Park, right? You don't see that at the A's games at the Oakland Coliseum. You don't see that at Warriors games or Sharks. You know, why is it that those guys who are going someplace to look for trouble, why do they feel it's okay and a good thing for them to be able to go to an NFL game?
There's
something about that. I mean, did you see there's another video? I guess some 49ers fans, these people in 49ers jerseys, at a Buffalo Wild Wings in Southern California, got in a fight on the sidewalk outside the Buffalo Wild Wings after starting trouble on the inside with some fans of the Steelers or New York Giants or something. You know, what is that about? There's just something that the NFL is doing to attract those people, maybe not wittingly, or maybe just they're just not on top of what their message they're sending that attracts those people. I mean, that's, to me, is a bigger question. And what I don't know if I'm.
Well, it's a violent sport. It's a violent sport. I understand that maybe that's part of it. But yeah, you're
hockey.
Right.
And that's ultimate fighting. Right. You know, UFC. You know, I mean, you just don't see those sorts of kind of almost tribal, rumblings. I don't know.
Yeah, no, but I do think that you can't control everything, but it is good that it's being addressed because it really needs to be. So.
Well, yeah, I trust the Santa Clara police chief. I think he's probably under appreciated that they got those guys that caused that trouble within 48 or 72 hours, you know. And today with everybody having a camera, I mean, you know, people, these guys are knuckleheads, as I point out, and idiots anyway. But let's see what happens the rest of the way. But bottom line, I don't think anything the Santa Clara City Council is going to do is going to prevent something like that happened the other night if you continue to attract those kinds of guys. And I guess there was a 17-year-old girl that was arrested, too, that was part of that.
Jeez.
Crazy. But, you know, they've got to put restrictions on and enforce them. And I don't know that the City Council of Santa Clara is going to be able to affect what really, in my mind, is kind of a cultural issue.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, hopefully that.
No, I am right, Joe. Yeah. I have opinions on demand, and I am always right.
And I hope we don't see these incidents all the time.
Well, no, the one last year was really much more serious than this.
Right.
Didn't get maybe as much attention. But a guy got knocked out with, you know, had a severe brain injury, got in the restroom, the men's restroom, just his head at the floor. I've been meaning to try to track down that story to see how that guy's doing.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I'll let you know.
Yeah. Well, Mark, thanks so much for stepping in this week. I really appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon.
Hope so. Always enjoy it, Joe, and let's see what happens. The saga will continue.
That's Mark Purdy from the Bay Area News Group filling in for Steve Bono this week, and we are scheduling with Mark to try to have him back again next Tuesday with Steve still on vacation. The 49ers are in Arizona taking on the Cardinals on Sunday, and we will podcast on Tuesday about that game. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to 49ers Extra.